Welcome to Dominate for Two, a War Machine and Hordes podcast.
I'm Alex.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Benjamin.
I'm also Alex.
And today we wanted to talk a little bit about the new errata system. I don't think we've had our first one yet, but we just wanted to...
We had a cleanup one that was fixing gang fighter and
unyielding,
like flank, all the engaging benefits.
Yeah, but I think what everyone's really excited about is the one in January where their PP has said they're gonna kind of clean up some actual rules, rebalance the models from the edition.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of delve into that and see what we think about this new strategy to kind of change the game every 6 months.
Yeah, there are vague promises to up certain casters and maybe down some other casters.
I'm kind of excited to see the new shakeabouts, to be honest, because, like, I mean, I've played, like, League of Legends and Dota, and I've seen, like, the rise and fall, and I know some people are investing a lot more money into this than, like, those type of games. But
I mean, maybe.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. I would even say I'm a white whale for that fact. I've invested a lot of money into that game, but it's just, like, I'm excited to see live updates to the game as it goes on.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't work right now, like the entire faction of Scorn. Some casters are blatantly too powerful. The Hellmouth and Sentry Stone, as it stands now, obsolesce a lot of their factions.
Just to touch on those really quick, though, as just recently switching to Circle, I'd say those two are also keeping those factions in the game, too, which is kind of an odd thing to say.
Yeah.
But Legion without the Hellmouth or Circle without the Sentry Stones, I don't know if they can compete.
So this is one of the implications to the errata cycle that I actually find worrying is a lot of the factions, not all, like Kador, Protectorate, Trolls, a couple others feel, for the most part, really well done, really solidly built factions. A lot of them really don't. Like Scorn, obviously terrible. Circle feels really bad in most facets, but they have a couple of outlier things that are probably too powerful in general. My worry is almost that, we'll just patch it later, will become kind of a mantra to excuse lazy design on the first pass. And so you get just like a lot of junk accumulating in the game.
But you can also get stuck in a cycle if you keep readjusting and readjusting a model before release. Like sometimes, like, you have to get it into people's hands and let them break it before you can actually see it, because it's easy to theorize a concept and be like, I really like this model, and then let's test it. Oh yeah, that was really cool. I wonder how everybody's gonna mess with this, and they completely take it and go a different direction than what you imagined.
Yeah, I think my biggest concern with all of this is that, I mean, obviously, I like Privateer Press. I love their games. I've been playing it for at least a decade now and have no regrets. My main concern and this is obviously purely from a competitive viewpoint, because obviously casual stuff doesn't matter in regards to what some of the balance is that you get too little proper QA on the changes, because having worked at a bunch of companies where you make games and even, you know, any app development or any other systematic thing, and I feel this is what happened with Mark III the most, is that they made changes but didn't track the changes properly. And I think that was the number one problem with the Mark III release, is that whatever their overall intention was, and I think obviously they were trying to make a balanced, fun game, and for the most part they succeeded, is they just didn't put it into the right people's hands to break open the numbers and the volume to see what happened. And they have had that problem for a while, where you can tell they believe certain models are too strong, but nobody else agrees with them. And if they had a better QA feedback, they could be like, hey, why do you think this is that strong? And I think that's missing.
I mean, they did open up to more people to be more play testers, but some of those people, like, I was talking with my group back down in SoCal, we were talking about, do we want to be play testers? And a lot of us were like, no, we don't want to do that, because it becomes kind of a job in a way, and we want to be able to enjoy it. So maybe they have a lack of QA.
I mean, just having done a lot of development, I think it's more just the system involved because, you know, I was in the Mark II playtest and I enjoyed that feedback process that they had. And, you know, they didn't do everything perfectly, but I think they did a really good job with that one.
Yeah.
But I think it's the target of what they're playtesting. I think they just don't have all the steps thought out properly to make sure that they're not putting models in that have fundamental balance issues to start with.
I guess my theory on the whole thing was like, it didn't seem, I mean, Lock and Load was in June, but I also felt like they could have like had an errata right after to fix all the things. And they fixed most of the things that were crazy, but they decided to continue to let this cycle go and stay to the original errata cycle, which I honestly think they are doing like a cute quality assurance playtest for everybody that's playing the game currently. And I know people are like, oh, why aren't you releasing a quality product? I mean, Privateer is still technically a smaller company compared to a lot of, I mean, companies that can do quality QA at this current point.
Yeah.
I guess my big concern is this the strategy? Like, kind of throw stuff to the wall and see what sticks on everything. Because if you look at the new round of casters, like Unitu, seems like she was just an idea that got minimal playtesting and got put out. Same. So my big concern is whatever mistakes they're happening, they're kind of just letting out into the world, and they're going to switch every 6 months. But that's kind of bad with War Machine, because War Machine, it usually takes 6 months to a year for a list to kind of mature and get out. So they're going to start changing things before the answers to those things get made. And then we're just going to be in like an odd magic cycle where people just take the most broken thing, like the new release, and that gets played for 4 months until the new things that's released. And those changes are kind of going to always be a step behind.
Well, you see the same thing in like MOBAs when there's even the slightest imbalance or a new character being like somewhat off kilter. The first week that they're on sale, every goddamn game, because you get people being inexperienced against them, compounding being slightly too powerful, and it makes for this really overwhelming effect in practice.
Yeah, and the other thing is, and this is the first time I've honestly ever seen this, is watching people chase the new lists for the power curve, where...
I'd say it's been happening, but not...
Not to the extent, right, because obviously, you know, people would faction swap because they were... Either the play style didn't match what they wanted, or they felt they needed some other tool in the box to win at the highest level. But it wasn't like they were, and a lot of times they weren't even completely faction swapping. They were just little list build swapping. But now I'm watching people literally buy into a completely new faction just to get that one list advantage and go with it because they feel that the skew is so strong that if they're not doing that, they're honestly not competing to win the tournaments. And that's something new that I haven't seen as much of.
I mean, new is always a skew against opponent, right? Like, they're like, think about the games that you played, like at a con against a gentleman who came from like an area that doesn't have a large tournament meta. He comes in, oh, and that's new. What's that? And then you're just like, oh, this might be one of those games where I'm going to feel really bad. Because you designed a list to be soul-crushing because you expect the people in your area, which you've played against a lot, they know how to deal with it. But if new is always going to be a curveball.
Right. Yeah, you're always... There's an asymmetrical information advantage just in playing something.
Which is my concern with the errata. Because for me, what I would have kind of liked to see it with the errata is my issue is potentially the time. I think 6 months is too much. I think rules changes yearly would be one thing, but maybe the off one should just be points. Something in between where you're not screwing with rules.
Or even just a clarification. So that's something I'd like to talk about, because a lot of folks seem to hold opposite opinions from you and I. I think a lot of the changes, like releases or major erratas, almost move faster than the pace of metagame evolution in War Machine. War Machine tends to take a really long time to move into a relatively settled space where what you can anticipate in a competitive environment isn't utterly chaotic or like anything goes. And unless there's some like spam of the day that's incredibly powerful, like Mad Dogs are, unfortunately, or right now.
Body and Soul, whatever, EE. But even so, well, even take a list like that, like Bradigus or Mad Dogs, someone still has to be convinced that it is that good to buy that much stuff. That usually takes a month or two, a War Machine weekend win or something to prove to them, yeah, it's broken and it's good enough. Them to buy all those models, which are usually hard to find at that point. So yeah. For that list to kind of get into the world takes about 4 months.
It yeah. actually takes longer than that because EE and Body and Soul, they were out for like years and it was nobody like, it touched was, them until...
It was about a year each. Yeah. They were yeah. about a year from drop to full implementation.
And people looked at those and were like, why would I play this? And then suddenly people show you like, this is why you play this list.
Well, I remember Body and Soul... I saw being played earlier than when it caught on at the tournament level, but the person in this area who was playing it wasn't into competitive play. So I remember playing into it and being like, whoa, that is way stronger than I thought it would be, but then not seeing it again.
Yeah, because that Theme Force kind of built itself. Like, there weren't other configurations of
right.
the list.
It and was... Jamar was the only person I knew in the area who had enough drudges on hand at the time that the list came out. And I remember I'd gone over to his house and we were playing War Machine, and I don't remember what I was playing into it, but I remember getting my face wrecked. I was like, wow, that is a good list. Yeah. But he's not in tournament inclined, so yeah. it didn't... But also, it was a drudge issue. People just didn't have the drudges for a while.
Because, like, you're a Crix. You right. can right. play drudges. And let's kind of rewind back towards, like, the errata and everything. I've also heard, like, that... Primary points are going to be adjusted. I just think there's a couple of promises that it seemed egregious that they're trying to adjust in the coming one.
Yeah, I guess that's what I worry about is what is egregious. If you open up the PP forums and just start reading that and go, I'm going to fix War Machine today. Let's see what the forumites want me to change. The whole game would change. And then 2 weeks again, you'd have to change all the revisions of the revisions.
I mean, and that's why I said, like, when we were talking earlier, a good game designer, and it's not to say it might not work for other people, is a good game designer will listen to your feedback, but will be enough to tell you when to hit the road.
Right.
Like, this is the game that I built. You can enjoy it and understand why these rule sets, why these limitations exist, or you move on, because you can't give everybody everything. There would be no fights. Everybody would be just bringing the same exact thing.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And that's really important, is keeping in mind that the end state of a competitive game tends to be a mono build end game, which is to say the optimal strategy is eventually located and you are reduced to just playing that. So, I mean, to a certain extent, you want some change up or variety in your game. But if something is genuinely the strongest, that's a dynamic you'll see. When World War first dropped, you saw the game after some chaos eventually gravitating toward that. And then it got eroded and the game went back to normal. The War Machine cycle, though, apart from like insanely powerful things, does take a very long time to settle. And even when you get to like a place of relative equilibration, which is to say not total chaos that comes from a major rules revamping, when you're in a state of not total chaos, the competitive environment becomes somewhat predictable, and then people start making adjustments to counter what they're seeing. And at this point, you get a really healthy growth that I think you could call a mature game environment. The game environment is allowed to mature, and that's where the meta development happens. If every 6 months you're spinning the ball again after it starts to settle, the game's not going to be competitively tenable,
thing,
I don't feel.
The thing going off of World War, if you remember back when they announced World War, people thought that they made a knee-jerk reaction to the Shifting Stones because of World War. I guarantee you that was not a knee-jerk reaction to World War. It was
A plan. Kruger 2 and a couple other Shifting Stone items were just too powerful.
Yeah, they had that plan for a long time, and a lot of stuff.
Yeah, well,
actually
they
planned.
Said that. Jason Souls, I think it was at Gen Con, during one of the Q&A sessions, had said that World War was based on the concept that they were already disallowing the multi-port at the time they had built the list.
But then you get the accusations of, like, you didn't playtest this. Why is the... They knew they were going to release this into the area because they had two, because right. they have release cycles.
I don't... So if that was really the case, why didn't you make the Shifting Stone change when you released World War?
Because of the schedule of the release for the what is War Machine?
It was the championships. Book, Devastation.
No, they said that they had held off on it because there was that.
It was the WTC.
Right. So the errata was timed with the WTC schedule that year.
Yeah.
And so that's, they had released, because remember, Radagast was a pre-release.
At Gen Con. Right. And then there was WTC,
technically his double port phase only existed during the pre-release cycle, not the release cycle.
How long was that? 3 months?
Yeah.
It was actually three months after he entered the game.
He had his street release date around War Machine weekend. The Theme Forces started being spoiled at WTC, and then he actually was on full release by War Machine weekend. Yeah. No one owned enough World Watchers to really run it there.
Yeah.
And then the off-season happened, conventions started happening, and then the errata happened.
The World War was running rampant, and then the errata came in and like tweaked them back to normal, right. I believe.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think there was an area where you could play World War and you had no problems.
I mean, my biggest concern actually with the errata cycle is the actually, not the errata cycle itself, but the constraints that the print cycle is going to be imposing on Privateer Press.
How so?
Well, because if you look at the two books that are already printed and shipping, because they have to be based on the schedule when they're releasing, you already have Circle committed to, and you have Menoth committed to. So whatever rules they wrote for those two factions are coming in a book in a container right now.
So, correction to that, they've stated on a couple, I think it might have been on a podcast or a statement, that they've stated that the first two had as many corrections as they could put in, but all the other ones
right,
after
it. Right, but they already made, I mean, the problem was is that those books went into print 4 months ago.
Yeah.
So whatever corrections, because I mean, we know Una's as written right now, because that's in the book. And Scorn hasn't been printed yet, so Scorn is a great opportunity for them to revise it before a book comes out, because they haven't sent the book to the printers. But it's going to be hard, especially with the Theme Force modifications, when they come out with the Theme Forces and the books and all that, you're going to have schedules where if you catch something after the print's already been done, as a company, it becomes a huge issue. You know, do you send stickers to the people buying it like they did that one time?
Oh, at Superiority.
Right. Well, you know, like it becomes a weird problem because you don't want to sell a book to a customer and be like, oh, by the way, by the time you bought this, it's wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a terrible product experience.
Though they are doing, like, I think they are doing some of the right things. They are making any of the errated cards free to download from what they've stated. And they're also, you know, like, everybody seems to have a cell phone that or tablet that I've played against, and it's been in War Room. And I know people don't like the War Room excuse, and like, well, technology is making it a lot more advances for us to be able to play it.
Yeah, consider the climate of the game when it was first released, where selling cards with your models was a major revolution in 2003 versus the world we live in today. Like, even in 2013, the War Room thing was still a bit of a, like, still a bit of a contentious point because some people were still on flip phones. But now, like, the technology is so ubiquitous that I don't think it's unreasonable to just switch to that.
Yeah, but I mean, you do have, and there's the business argument, though, that you don't want to have somebody go in and buy a $60 book and then have to go somewhere and read about the changes to it. I mean, it is a poor experience for the sort of customer that you're trying to attract with those book purchases.
I mean, I think the problem is not with digital media. The problem is with the print media.
Yeah.
Right. I'm just saying that that's a business consideration for the cycle that's going to impact things.
They've been pretty open about moving past that. I think that was a problem 3 or 4 years ago, but now they have no problem changing rules.
And I think the theme force books and the command books, they're there for those who love their faction, because like I only bought the codexes that had minions or the minions fluff in them because I actually enjoyed reading the fluff. I didn't buy it for the rules and the cards. I would probably go online, find out what that did, and I went and purchased it because I did research, not just because it was in the book.
Right. Well, and the release cycles surrounding some of the books, and like obviously logistics reasons, like having models made overseas or any number of manufacturing complications, led to the fiction where the books were, you know, like in early War Machine, the books contained the releases for that year. Half had already come out, the other half was coming. And, you know, after a while that just stopped being the case because either models were several books away or whatever, mm-hmm. and the print book was effectively a spoiler with some stories thrown in, like, oh, okay, okay. But it no longer reflected the reality of the game. And the reality of the game is the release cycle is what it is.
Yeah. And also going back to the Errata that's coming in January, they specifically stated that they will not be, like, making huge change Erratas, except in January. So we'll have, like, rule changes and point tweaks in the January Errata, but the June Errata or June-July-ish Errata is things that fixes some uncanny tweaks. And then goes through, and then January happens again, and then the cycle continues. They're trying to be, like, reactionary, but not to the point where it's just gonna, like, shake up everything.
Yeah,
it seemed like, and that's some of the statements I heard from them they've made.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very hopeful. At least they, as a company, recognize that there are issues and they're trying to fix them for the benefit of everybody, which is nice to see. And you know, they have a history of having had some very well balanced, thought out things. So I mean, I feel they definitely can do it. But of course, this being the first errata, it will be interesting to see how it actually plays.
Yeah.
I honestly just wish, you know, again, with Mark III, they had just waited a little longer before releasing it, so we would have had a more polished product.
Well, so I do want to turn back to, like, the greater conversation about metagame evolution rather than, like, the specific business decisions of Privateer Press. As well, it's interesting, it's all kind of speculation.
Yeah.
Whereas metagame development is something we can talk about in very concrete terms. So you've got January major errata, July minor errata, and then somewhere around there you have the steamroller change. That's actually been one of the weirdest transitions in War Machine, is moving the steamroller change, the tournament format change, which is effectively, like, you know, a part three to the rule book. Almost more than any other publication they make, the tournament packet.
The most important rule.
Yeah, it determines the format that the game is played in. Because how it is in competition is how it is in practice for competition. Which is to say, if your metagame has any competitive players at all, them wanting to be in this practice mode, even if the rest of the group is dedicated casuals, will drag the entire climate of the game toward competitive practice, or at least toward competition-style games. That's still a spin the ball after the major errata injects a chaos phase, to the extent that it winds up doing that. Scorn is getting a total revamp, and, you know, they're making other major balance changes, so I think it's fair to assume we're going to enter another chaos period after January. But the steamroller packet is a little bit of a change, too, and something that's been remarkable to me is that, I guess we were talking about this earlier, the two-list versus three-list format thing, and people's complaint that the meta game got stale in Mark II, which I've always found really weird. Because more of that, I mean, I don't think it came from the individual balance state of the models, but from the fact that there was no three-list, or rather that you had to cover all possible matchups in two lists. And that constrained your choices so narrowly that when the metagame did settle down, it settled down to a kind of smallish pool. And you got 2014, which basically introduced that change, 2015, which went for a whole year and a half because of the change to when the steamroller packet came out and becoming sort of
June and lock and load and...
Right, right. So you had an extra long 2015, and then 2016 was in many regards very similar to 2015. You kind of saw a very set game, but it was mostly for steamroller packet reasons.
And character restrictions, too.
And character restrictions, yeah.
It's Although, hard to build a third list.
See our character unit episode, though. That's a lot less relevant than it was. Eris changing was a big one, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a model that defined the metagame whenever someone talked about, oh, I can't do this because of upkeep removal. You mean because of Eris, right? Just because of Eris.
What I also thought was funny was taking advantage of that without taking her, knowing that nobody was taking the upkeeps because they assumed you would have her.
Let it be someone else's problem.
So what do you guys think is the metagame evolution cycle of War Machine? Is it about a year, or is it just because that's about the frequency we're accustomed to seeing steamroller change?
I think it's about that long. I mean, you need to find out who the heavy hitters are what that list is and then come up with a counter to kind of for the field.
Yeah.
So I'd say a year is about the right time.
I mean, but consider the case of 2015, because 2015 was a year and a half. I mean, like, 2015, the heavy hitters were more or less set after the winter errata that year. And then you continue for the next, like, 17 months. I guess over those 17 months, did the game change more or less than you had expected it to in a year?
I think it jumped up and down and around a lot. But I think what's also in June, when they did release Mark III, people were ready to and ravenous to just break that thing apart and like figure out like what was good in that. Mm-hmm. And so that's maybe that's why the meta said it settled. I kind of think the meta is settling a little bit way faster than it normally would, because people wanted to, they were hungry. They were like, this is new. I want to break this.
I don't think the edition change actually had a lot to do with the meta being stale or not. Like,
yeah.
I think if they told you Mark IV was coming in a year, everyone would stop playing Mark III just to be, because they'd be so excited about, let me solve a new new game.
Yeah, like, I also think part of the problem with the Mark II meta was that the actual players who are running the tops of a lot of these tournaments tend to be the same people year after year after year. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them had gotten into a rut because they'd found something they liked to play and were good with. And so whether there were other choices in their faction or not, and I'm guilty of this as well, is that they just kept playing the same thing at tournaments. You'd show up, you're like, oh, I'm good with this list, I'll take this list. Mm-hmm. And so I think some of the stagnation came from that as well, because people would see them winning with the same list, and they weren't really changing it, you know, from tournament to tournament.
Who jump onto that bandwagon because that list is winning.
Right.
And then so you see slow stagnation because...
I don't know. I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing, though, because even the good players who were winning with armies, they would switch. Like, look at Jay Larson. He was playing Haley 2 for days and then specifically moved into Trolls. Maybe he was just bored. But I also have a feeling it had to do with the meta changing and getting harder to win with Signar and moving to a new space that opened up in the list they're being taken.
It can be the name that you have for yourself. Jay was considered like a Signar only guy, so you're like, all right, Jay Larson, he's coming up, and then Trolls.
I mean, it could be. I think it almost mirrors like a card game style meta game where there's a brief, like, maybe 1 month ultra hectic period when new cards drop, and then because card games like Magic have a significantly higher game frequency, you know, the number of games you can get per hour is way higher. The game settles out more quickly into a mature meta, typically after about a month. Then the eminent like power pieces or power pairs emerge, and there begins this game of playing on nuances within that environment. And, you know, the major set pieces are still there, but you're alternating like little things here and there to gain meta advantage.
Also, you can see it like going off the Magic cost and transportability. A deck of cards is easier to bring, put together, and walk over to your friend's house and play a couple of games of Magic than it is the, I'm going to grab my bag and pull out all my models.
Well, for a lot of reasons, games like Magic or Hearthstone have a logically higher frequency than War Machine, but I think what you saw in that so-called period of stagnancy was a mature game environment, and when you see serious business players changing their factions or changing what they're playing, it is for mature metagame reasons. And I think it's almost kind of cheap to call it boredom. It's an easy answer, but I think the reality is that they remain competitive and they're doing this for competitive reasons. Like, Ben, what you were talking about with, I'm good with this, I'll play this, and doing that at every single tournament. I had that for ages and ages. I played the same Rosheth list for like 3.5, almost 4 years continuous with small changes throughout, just because I'm good at it. Like, I run it effectively. I barely have to think to win most of my games anymore. All these things. And I ran a Xerxes list for almost 2 years, and I just played it because I was good at it. And I didn't see... I saw, like, a mounting case for why to change, but it was very slow to emerge. And I'll never forget it. Brian Marino said to me, after my second loss for identical reasons at Kingdom Con, he said, like, you know, Alex, why are you handicapping yourself with all this stuff? Like, you're clearly a competitive guy. Why don't you just play what works? Or rather, he said, why aren't you playing an army like this? And I'm like, you know what? You're right. It's time to like make a change. And it took me, like, even within that competitive cycle, it took me months and months and months to get to that place where, like, I've put in the number of games, I've hit the frequency cap to say, okay, long run, this doesn't have longevity. You're right, let's change it.
Also, like, playing what you know is also a pretty good strength. I'm kind of a sus player at times, but I'm also very competitive. Like, the dependency between playing what works and playing what you're good at is something that I think it's a difference. Like, if you're good and you good at that thing, but you like playing it, and then another person looks at it like, why are you playing it? Is that a reason to stop or shift?
I don't know. I jump around factions a lot, and I don't think it's as hard to pick up something new as what everyone says. It's just most people either can't because they don't own the models, or they're not willing to because War Machine is, there's that hobby aspect to it where you spent, you know, 100 plus hours painting something. You don't necessarily want to do it all over again. It's not that hard to switch. So I think there is something being said for, you need to make sure your list performs.
Yeah.
And you'll be a good player because if you practice enough, you'll get good at the game. Like, you know, spacing, how things work. You have a knowledge of the enemy's models. So eventually you can just play anything. Mm-hmm. So you should just play with what works. And that's what happens at the higher level tables. Like, Chris Davies had to borrow 5 Mad Dogs the day of. He'd been playing it for a while, but that list isn't going to take 20 reps to figure out how to play it.
Mm-hmm. No.
Like, you're going to figure it out. Just a couple
of positioning ideas and everything. Yeah.
So I play a lot of Hearthstone. I'm off and on. Never on enough to go to, like, competitions and stuff like that, because my main hobby is War Machine. But, like, changing isn't intrinsically hard. It just takes, like, you build a new deck, you pound out a couple of reps, you get the rhythm of the deck, you go in and you fine-tune it, and that's relatively easy. It'll take you, like, 2 days, because the game's so much higher frequency. But identifying what I'm... Disagree?
I'm terrible at Hearthstone building decks. Like, I could, like, miniature games, I could always get behind and understand, okay, this is good, this is good. Whenever I came to a card game, I just, like, froze. Like, I don't know what's good.
Well, so, like, Hearthstone, like, my frequency is so much higher that I feel like I'm able to identify, play, 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 and I start to recognize, like, okay, I'm playing really well, like I'm a better player than this, why is my win-loss rate suffering in this way? Clearly something needs to change. That, for me, in Hearthstone can emerge over, like, a week to a couple of weeks. In War Machine, it takes months. And that's the motivator for change, not that I'm good at it, so I'll stick with it. It's, I'm good at it, it's achieving results, and I will stick with it as long as it continues achieving results. Identifying when it's no longer achieving results is what takes a lot of time, and for me is why I change slowly.
So, to bring some of the ideas on the topic back into the fold, what are some people's hopes and fears that the errata cycle may bring for the general meta in the game itself?
So for me, I kind of look back to Gatsby 2, and this may not be popular, but I kind of like the way he was nerfed. Because right now I feel like the game is oscillating very quickly. Things that were bad are good. Oh, this thing's bad, let's make it great. Let's see what happens. And it's just kind of chaos. Gatsby was winning way too many tournaments. They hit him. They're like, oh, he's still really good. Let's hit him a little bit more. A little bit more. You should never be going to make something great to unplayable until Mark III hit, and that's exactly where he's at. So now what I want to see is, I don't want to see the top 5 become the bottom 5 and the bottom 5 become the top 5. I just want everything to kind of advance towards the mean.
Slowly collapse toward the mean.
I don't want to see just Mark II Gatsby 2 again, because they're like, oh yeah, he is bad. Let's make Gatsby 2 great again. I do not want to see that.
Oh, we can get baseball caps with that.
I like that idea.
Oh, branded DF2 swag.
It would set a fire once it placed upon my head.
But yeah, that's really, I just want a more, like, a slower rules change. Errata-wise, for me, what I would like to see, instead of changing rules in general, just change points first. Like, let's see a 10-point Mad Dog. We were talking about this on Wednesday, and the KDR player who just bought his 10 Mad Dogs, he was like, Well, no, this is ridiculous because the Berserker would never be taken. Don't care. Just make it a, like, higher points and see what
happens.
I played
Ham Spam. Don't do that. I'm still trying to sell off all my battle boards.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet. Yeah.
But, oh, yeah, I think that's the first step because if the rules got through playtesting, at least keep the rules and adjust the points. Because War Machine always is on a fine line. Like, a 5-point model versus a 8-point model could be the whole difference in the list. So from a designer's perspective, I'm sure it's an incredibly difficult job. So make the changes small before you go off.
Yeah, well, another thing that also we've talked about, which seems weird that they haven't looked at doing this from what I can tell, is that they have the field allowance number, which is something they could add to models without necessarily changing much of anything that would completely constrain the volume problem. Because if you made a Mad Dog FA3, for example, suddenly it's a much more tolerable situation for your opponent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, they're still probably severely undercosted.
Right, but the FA3 suddenly makes it so that it's not as backbreaking a problem because you can't skew as far.
You can still create a list. And I've talked to several people. It's been a back and forth, like, do we add FAs to Jacks since there's so many Jacks now? Is it really worrisome to put an FA allowance on Jacks and Lights? Like, a lot of people say it's just, I think, a balance between 3 to 4 in an FA allowance isn't necessarily a bad thing. Most people lean towards, like, a 4 for just everything, for lights and
a 4
heavies.
Usually doesn't even really help spam either. So, like, if you looked at Una 2, if you...
Una gives almost no craps. You get, like, 1 or 2 more Rotter Horns or Razor Wings. But basically the core of her list remains.
Yeah, I really think even if you take it to 3 for most Jacks would actually impact some of the spam list design.
Yeah, it really just helps cap them from a like, if you did make a small error, it can only be an error for this much. You can't.
It makes your job as a designer so much easier to just build in limitations like this. Like, did we playtest for spam? A little bit, but at most you can take 3. So we just have to test to see if 3 is a problem.
You have a safety protocol kind of put in. Like, will a person want to buy this many? Outlook from the psychology of the people around here, probably. They will probably buy a whole bunch of them if it's good. I'm actually very optimistic about the changes. I've liked a dynamic changing thing because I like new. I've always liked new in a game system.
Novelty seeking, always a higher value.
Yeah, just fun stuff that happens. Maybe something comes down, comes up. At least you're trying things in your new faction. Now, something that that I will say that I hope that nothing gets too egregious, and I do like the slow creep of fixing, but I think if they stand to what they're saying, like, major changes are in January, fixes and tweaks are in June and July, slightly, maybe they add a couple one, like, if there's an egregious thing, add that in, and they move forward with that, I think it will be a fine formula for good success.
So for me, the one thing I think I fear most is an emergent mono build metagame, which is to say the climate immediately after World War dropped before there was an errata. The game very rapidly hones in on the one build that's optimal and the limited set of counters to it that specifically work against it all the time and against each other. If I have to put up with 6 months of an emergent mono build metagame, my interest in the game probably won't last those 6 months. I mean, I might come back if they change it, but, like, I really don't want to tolerate half a year where that's the case.
Yeah, it's just my worry because this really reminds me of, like, 4th edition 40K.
Yeah,
where it was, like, the new codex hit, and it was Tower amazing. And then, like, don't worry, we fixed Tau, but orcs came out, that type of thing.
I mean,
we'll see.
I think with the coming books, I mean, they did this before. I mean, the addition of the theme books is a new one. But if you think back to Mark II, they did Forces of books and they had new stuff in them. And then they eventually went back to a new cycle of here's a compilation book, here's a compilation book. And it's something maybe we have to ask is the compilation books and are they able to keep up with the compilation books the reason why they're switching to this system?
Right.
I'd almost rather just see them go by like a relatively even distribution, just the model release cycle is the model release cycle. I mean, which is the reality that we've been living with for several years. Like, it's not actually book-based. It's just what comes out-based.
They really don't even need books anymore.
No, like, they don't.
I mean, were the Hellmouths in the Legion deck when Legion came out? Were Hellmouths in there? I don't recall.
So the edition came out, Hellmouths were on sale. It doesn't matter whether they were in the deck or not. The fact of the matter is they were in the game because they came out at the same time the edition came out. Yeah, so that's pretty much it for me. The other thing I am somewhat frightened of is almost the opposite, where it turns out both erratas are super crazy times every year, and the game never settles into even a semi-mature, like, competitive environment. Then the game is just a giant unpredictable mess where the shape of the game you're playing could change in terms of the amount of time it takes for the game to adapt overnight.
And going back to Mark One, where every new caster was the new nightmare,
the new craziness.
Yeah, I don't want to play in that environment.
I'll also say for them, they've actually been attending a lot of conventions for Privateer specifically, and getting to know how their gamers are playing. They even brought in like one of the big time gamers to help work and design the game, who has been like won multiple tournaments and is considered a really good. So I think they're trying to adjust and have the community's heart in mind that they want to continue having healthy men. Because if War Machine goes, and I love Privateer's products, but War Machine's the bread and butter that's keeping them going. If it fails, then who's to say that that company won't disappear?
It would be bad times.
Yeah.
So it's in their best interest to make a game that's healthy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the game's healthy. That's what I worry about.
Like, if that's truly a concern, this gets back more into business development. There's a difference between being healthy and selling models and being healthy as a game.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think all of us sitting around this table are competitive players, but going into any game, you know that that community is 40% at best of the overall people who play the game. So.
But since I've been in playing War Machine, coming from other games, I've noticed that it's been a lot of game first. Like, people, I'll ask people, like, why are you playing the game? Like, they'll kind of say the miniatures are cool, but really they enjoy the game the most.
Right.
And that's what makes them the funds to keep them afloat.
Yeah, and I think that War Machine, the gameplay itself is also its core stickiness right now because, you know, there's a lot of games that have great miniatures that kind of come and go that haven't been as successful, but the gameplay of War Machine keeps people playing it, you know, to a degree that most of the other games other than Games Workshop don't seem to have.
Well, it's not just minis, though. Like, for me, if the competitive game goes, a lot of my enjoyment of War Machine is, one, I like the game a great deal, and two, it's mastery-driven. I feel like I'm doing well at the game, and I'm interested to see how deep this particular rabbit hole goes. If, you know, if I'm convinced that the whole thing is bottomed out, like, I'm going to abandon ship to something I enjoy as an amateur a good deal and, you know, seems to offer a greater competitive depth. And in the short term, that's probably Hearthstone. In the long term, maybe look at other minis games, maybe get back into video gaming.
Cool.
Yep.
Anything else? No. Don't screw it up, PP.
Thank you for listening to Dominate for Two. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Got a question or an episode idea? Email us at dominateforto.podcast@gmail.com. We'll be right back.